6 1/2 minutes after 5 o'clock, and it's time for Spectrum West, where people come to hear about the arts, music, and humanities in Western Wisconsin. We're here every Friday following the news at 5, and we appreciate all there is to talk about in this big, wide neighborhood of ours, within earshot of 88.3 and 88.7 on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Al Ross. Today, we're going to meet Rick Bertone. He's a band member and founder of the premier Beatles tribute band, The Britons, coming tomorrow evening to the Heidi Center. Of course, tonight, before that, is Peter Yarrow at the Heidi Center. We'll hear about the Falling Leaves Art Studio Tour happening this weekend, and another one. The 5th Flyway Film Festival is coming this month, and director Rick Vacious will be here to take us behind the scenes. Jim Oliver welcomes the author and director of an original play that is the latest production of the Menominee Theater Guild. We'll have a couple short verses from poet Noelle Kroplin appearing tonight at the Volume 1 Gallery. And we turn the key on our list of guests with this brief conversation about a chili cook-off to benefit youth involvement in the arts in Chippewa Falls. Our guest is Melissa Kuklins. She's a CVTC intern, also the project leader for the event. So, while you listen, get out your favorite chili recipe and prepare to participate. This is the second annual. If some of the chilies from last year had the snap the chili should have, maybe some of those 7 judges they had last year are just recovering from the first annual, because chili is supposed to be that way. I also see some new things have been added, so tell me what's on the schedule for this year.
Tiny Photos photo booth, where people go in and they can make silly faces.
Oh, really?
Things like that. And they get a printout of like 4 different pictures that they took inside the booth.
Oh, cool. What else?
We are also having full face painting by Marnie of House Blend Lighting and Design in Chippewa Falls.
Okay.
And we'll have board games and card games, raffles, and of course, the chili tasting.
Did they have a family game night last year, or is that new this year?
They did do the family game night last year.
Well, it was kind of successful?
Oh, yes. We had 100 participants last year. It did very well. I'm hoping to probably double that.
I entered a chili cook-off, and it was a lot of fun. They had all the regular chilies in one area. They had all the hot chilies in another area. And you could bring stuff like sour cream and onions. So now, people who are familiar with the Heidi Center, where in the Heidi Center will this take place?
This will take place in the auditorium area on the 3rd floor, so the nice big space up there.
Okay. Now, I understand that there are certain requirements. What is a certified kitchen?
A certified kitchen would be like a kitchen at a nursing home or a church. It's something that's, you know, commercially cleaned.
You can bring 1 or 2 gallons, I read?
Yes. 1 to 2 gallons of chili for the tasting.
And it's preferred that it's prepared in a certified kitchen?
Yes.
Okay. You're encouraging entrants to do other things like costumes and decorations and things. That's new, or was that something that someone started last year and you thought, hey, that's cool, let's do more of that?
That's something that somebody started last year to bring a lot more fun to the event. There's going to be an award for the best decoration, best costume.
Okay, now are you having categories of chili, or is it just, what are they going to be voted on?
They're going to be voted on best presentation, best overall chili, most unique chili, and then of course the people's choice. Participants will get to judge on the best overall chili and the hottest chili.
You had 8 community groups last year. You had 7 judges.
We have 5 judges this year.
Are they regular people? Are they culinary giants? Or who are these judges?
They're regular people in the community.
Do people have to submit their recipes for the chili?
No, they don't have to.
But I'll bet you the best ones will be requested.
Of course.
Yeah. So I would guess that you might want to tell people that if they feel their chili is really good, then make some, and then make a really big batch this time. They can bring the rest to the cook-off. Tell us where we can get more information on the event, and then tell us where people who want to enter chili can do that.
To get more information on the event and for the chili entries, anybody can call the Heidi Center at 715-726-9000 or email cvca@cvca.net.
You also have registration forms at the office they can stop in?
Yes, we do.
And when's the deadline for registering?
The deadline is October 12th.
Wow, that's coming up. Thank you, Melissa Kuklins from the Heidi Center. The current exhibit, here's a Spectrum memo at the Red Horse Gallery in Fountain City, features work by Bernie McNally, media listed as Nail Assemblage and Graphite Series. The artist reception is tomorrow, 7 to 9 p.m. Red Horse is open Thursday through Saturday at noon. Yeah, it's 11 minutes after 5.
Support for WPR comes from Wisconsin Credit Union, announcing a new location in Eau Claire at the corner of Claremont Avenue and Craig Road. Complete information, including membership and loan applications, is at wisconsincu.org.
Thank you, sir. Spectrum West, I'm Al Ross. We appreciate your attendance today. The Oliver Report this week features an original play and a conversation with the originator and director. Jim Oliver, you're on.
The Cat of Colton County, an original play by Gregory Paulus of Eau Claire, will play Friday and Saturday, October 19th and 20th, at the Menominee Theater Guild Studio in Menominee. Joining us to talk about his play and his first foray into stage direction is the playwright, Gregory Paulus. So what is the play about?
Well, the play centers around a series of employees who work at a dilapidated elderly care facility, and they're encountering a series of possibly supernatural events, and they're trying to figure out what exactly is going on and what it means for them.
What gave you the idea for this? Anything special?
Not exactly. I saw a story on Animal Planet about weird animals, and one of them was about a cat that was supposedly predicting deaths at an elderly care facility, and I thought, that's kind of a neat idea. And then for a school assignment when I was still in college, we had to write a short horror story, so I thought I'd use that as my theme. And then I thought, you know what? I think I might try and turn this into a play.
Ah. So who is in the cast for this production?
I'm lucky enough to have my wife in the cast.
Oh, is that lucky? I don't know if
in this case it is. Yeah, she has an extensive theater background, so it's working out pretty good.
Okay.
And then I got some other friends in there, and Menominee Theater Guild regulars, like Ryan Peterson, Jonathan Rudenborg, Yusuf Kazimzada, and Kara Carlson.
Uh-huh. Now, you have been working with the Theater Guild for some time. You said you're a past member of the Board of Directors. Is that right?
That is correct, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, you told me that this is the first Menominee Theater Guild production staged in its studio space in 8 years. So tell us about this facility. How big is it? What kind of audience can it hold, that sort of thing?
Sure. Basically, it's considered an open box theater or a black box theater, and it can hold about 75 to 80 people comfortably seated. And it's where we normally just do all of our rehearsals, but you know, we're trying to get back into the habit of having some shows in there as well. We've had a long-running, what we call the studio series, but it's been dormant for some time.
I see. Are there plans for more studio series shows as in the near future, or is this
nothing planned right now? I guess I'm more of an experiment to see how this goes, mm-hmm. and it's something that they're definitely considering and always have been open to. It's just there hasn't been much call for it in the past, I guess.
Yours is the first original play to be staged by the theater company in more than 20 years. So, are there other budding playwrights in the wings that are thinking about perhaps producing something for the company?
I have heard that. I know there's some members on the board who have written some plays that would be thrilled to have them produced by the Theater Guild, but I don't know if they've approached them about it or not.
He is Gregory Paulus, playwright and director of The Cat of Colton County, going to be produced by the Menominee Theater Guild. Well, let's talk a little bit about your experience in theater. Are you do you have an educational background in theater?
None at all. I actually didn't grow up with any interest in theater and didn't have it until I met my wife. We'll have our 5-year anniversary on the 29th, so just a short time ago, I suppose. And then she had been on the board before I met her, and she got me on the board and got me interested, and I've taken it further than I ever imagined.
Well, I'm interested in people who actually write plays and things. How long did it take you to do that? Labor of love, or is it really hard work, or how does it go?
It actually came pretty naturally to me, which was very surprising because I never even thought it was something I could even consider trying. Mm-hmm. It just seemed too out of my realm and too hard to do. But I wrote it in about 6 months, maybe a little under, which I suppose I've been told is a fairly quick time for writing a play. But I don't know. I found it very interesting to do, and mostly I worked at it at night and when I had time here and there.
this production is staged in the round. Is that what you did? You write it to be staged in the round, or can this be done in a regular proscenium theater or sort of stage or whatever?
I actually wrote it with for a more traditional stage setting, but when it was decided it was going to be in the studio, then I thought, you know, this might be better suited to do in the round because of the small confines and make it more of an intimate show.
Can I ask about the actual work of doing in the round? I did one show in the round years and years and years ago, and I really enjoyed it. Have you had experience in working in the round before?
I actually haven't. My wife has done a show. Actually, the last show that was in the studio, she directed, and that was in the round. So I've been going to her for a lot of tips in that. But being my first time directing and first time doing anything in the round or even almost seeing anything in the round is... It's been quite a fun experience to try and figure everything out, but I think it's going pretty well.
It's my experience that once you get over the idea of sometimes you can just reach out and tap the knee of one of the people in the audience if you get towards the edge of the set. Once you get over that, it's a very intimate setting. You feel a real close connection to the audience. You indicated perhaps you have some other plays in the works, more cool stories?
I'm trying. They're not going as easily as The Cat of Colton County did, which, I don't know, when I finished that one, I was like, wow, this is actually really easy, but apparently it's not as easy as I thought. But some of the stories I'm working on is, one is a woman who is like the biggest celebrity in her time at that point and is looking to get out of just being famous and is looking to sabotage her career in order to do so. I seem to have this habit of working on multiple plays at once, because when I was writing The Cat of Colton County, I also wrote a stage adaptation of Rosemary's Baby, which I was told I legally cannot use. I tried to get the rights from the estate, and that just didn't go anywhere. But so, I don't know, I have this habit of going back and forth between plays so I can get some fresh eyes on them when I'm working on them.
I assume your wife probably works with you on as you write. Does she edit your work for you, or do you leave her out of it?
That's a fair assumption, but no. She doesn't seem to have much interest in it while I'm writing it. And in fact, after I had her read the finished copy of The Cat of Colton County, she said she was surprised by how good it was. Oh. So that hasn't deterred her from getting involved in the other ones, though. She's just not interested.
Well, that's high praise indeed if she will say that once you finish it, that's pretty good. Do you have any playwrights that you look up to or that you particularly enjoy?
I really enjoy the works of Agatha Christie. I like how the plays that I've seen are a one-setting setup. I think that's really nice. And I try to write minimal scripts because I know there's a lot of theater organizations, you know, that don't want to spend a ton of money on different sets and all that. So I try and keep that in mind, but I don't really necessarily have the background in theater to really say which playwrights I like, but I do like Agatha Christie.
Forgot to ask about the set. Is there a pretty elaborate set, or do you keep it pretty simple?
Given that it's in the round, it's kept down pretty simple just for sight lines and all that. It's a pretty minimal set, but I don't think it deters from the story in any way either.
Is it one act, two act?
It's a one act play. Should run roughly about an hour and 15 minutes.
Okay. Well, we've been talking to Gregory Paulus, who is the playwright and director of The Cat of Colton County. His original play will run Friday and Saturday, October 19th and 20th, in the Guild Studio at 502 West 2nd Street in Menominee. For ticket information, use your favorite internet search engine to find the Menominee Theater Guild website. Gregory Paulus, thank you for being with us.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from Visit Winona. Winona, the historic island city along Minnesota's Great River Road, Highway 61. Online at visitwinona.com, where arts, culture, and river beauty converge.
Spectrum West at 20 minutes after 5 o'clock. This is the program with arts, music, and humanities, and less on-air fundraising. We're in our fall membership drive, but you'll hear this program in its entirety. It's only possible with your support at WPR.org or at 800-383-9772. Well, in the world of film festivals, there's Cannes, Milan, Sundance, and soon, if things keep going as they have, maybe Flyway will be up in that same company. Rick Vacious is the director of the Lake Pepin Art and Design Center. A few years ago, they decided to preview some films, independent films, and little did he know to what ends that dabbling might lead. Today, in its fifth year, the Flyway Film Festival is growing in stature and attendance, and Vacious finds himself immersed in a very successful and popular venture. Back to the beginning and those smaller film events, let's talk about where that all came from. Tell me about that evolution. How did the first year go? That's always fun to ask.
Well, you know, the first year was very interesting because we hadn't really ever done anything like that before. I had spent some time volunteering previously at other festivals, but I'd never actually run one. So we were literally doing it by the seat of our pants and from the ground up. And oftentimes now, when I speak to other people in the film festival world, they laugh at the fact that we were actually able to pull off a fairly decent film event for a budget of about $4,000 that first year.
Wow.
You know, we didn't have the ability to bring filmmakers in or any of that kind of stuff, and we did it in one venue over the course of a weekend and screened 32 films that weekend and had about 400 people show up based on just postering around and handing out flyers and that kind of thing.
How many films do you get in any given year from which you have to select?
That's the overwhelming part of planning this event. We're reaching nearly 1,000 entries each year that we ask to have filmmakers submit, most of those being short films, of course, which makes the screening process of actually sitting down and viewing a film somewhat easier. But, you know, it's almost overwhelming. It's just the sheer volume of stuff that comes in every year. And it's disappointing because the hardest part of the process in building it is sending out that email to a filmmaker that has put together something really interesting and compelling and perhaps even relevant to our time and our area, but having to tell them, no, we can't program their work. So we turned down a lot of really good films.
Well, there certainly is no shortage of independent films today. People can do it fairly easily.
And that's what makes independent films so interesting, is that, you know, you can, for a very modest budget, go out and make a very decent movie. So, you know, while we try and bring in some bigger, larger budget films with recognizable names, where we really have done a lot of work over the last 4 years, is working with those filmmakers that aren't that name artist.
It's also cool that many of the filmmakers are going to be there, so people will be able to shake their hand and say, I really like that, and tell me more about how you do what you do, and there's a lot of pressing the flesh.
There is, and that's one of the things that I think is so compelling about going to a film festival, is that oftentimes the filmmaker is present or with other cast members, and you get to then ask questions about the story or how the film was made, those kinds of things, and that's part of what I really enjoy about it. Many filmmakers as we can to come into the community and have them interact with the audience and interact with the community.
Is something like the Sundance Festival, is that like the granddaddy of them? Was that the thing that got the ball rolling, or have there been even older ones than that?
Oh, yeah, there's certainly older ones. Cannes is older in France. Sundance is definitely the, you know, the 800-pound gorilla in the U.S., for sure.
And weren't they most noted for throwing their arms open for a lot of the independent films?
Absolutely, and I think that was Robert Redford's original vision when he started Sundance, was to make it a space where independent filmmakers could come and really get an opportunity to exhibit their work, and that it's not necessarily for the Hollywood studio type.
Is there a primary role of all the roles that a film festival like yours does have? Is it designed to simply be a place that people can go and view and screen independent films? Or is it more designed for the independent filmmaker to be able to say, yeah, I screened my film at the Flyway Film Festival and it won this? And then the second part of that question is, I wonder how many diamonds in the rough there are, because every year you hear about some film that won some award, and it just goes through the roof in popularity.
Sure. I mean, our intent is to be a celebration of film as an art form, and that then also means that we appreciate the makers of the art, which are obviously the directors and the producers and the actors, but also then the people that come that want to appreciate it. So that's sort of a two-pronged approach that we take. You know, we also offer educational opportunities for filmmakers and other interested people in that year. But really to celebrate the film as an filmmaker and the audience. To kind of address the second part, film is, and film festivals provide, you know, there are a number of different ways that people approach them. There are film festivals that are essentially market for filmmakers to go and show their wares and have somebody maybe buy their work to distribute it. And then others like ours, which is really more about the appreciation of the artwork and the art form.
Rick Vacious, Executive Director, Flyway Film Festival, now in its fifth year, October 18th through 21st, in Pepin and in Stockholm. Well, it's not just sitting around watching movies. Tell us about some of the events, other events planned during this year's festival.
Well, we always kick off our event on Thursday night with a really amazing, what we call our opening gala. We have area chefs and foodies prepare what really is just sort of an extremely highbrow potluck supper for everybody and get everybody together, filmmakers, our volunteers, lots of our sponsors and people that are supportive of the festival over the year and certainly in the last 5 years. And then we actually give out our jury awards before the festival begins. We have festival jurors that watch films in a certain category and then choose winners. So we give those awards out that night and then usually end up having live music. And this year we will be doing some film stuff outside of the Lake Pepin Art and Design Center, which is where the kickoff gala takes place, which is in Pepin. And we'll be doing a crowdfunding workshop. Musicians and filmmakers and other artists that listen will be familiar with crowdfunding as a method by which they can raise money to have their project happen. And so we'll be doing a workshop, crowdfunding workshop, and then we'll also be doing a women in film roundtable discussion. You know, we're very much interested in advocating for diverse groups to be able to have a voice in cinema. And the fact that Cannes Film Festival did not see fit to program any female filmmakers in their competition, and we'd like to get a collective group together and have them make a statement about the status of filmmaking for women and where they'd like to see it go in the next few years.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a trophy with a nickname?
We have an amazing award that we give out, essentially a piece of granite that local artist David Culver sculpts into an axe head. And we call it the Flyway Axe. And there is a very long story associated with the origination of that award. And I would encourage folks that are curious about it to come to the opening night because that's one of the stories that we always like to tell people. But it's unique, it's interesting, and people really, really are interested and hope they win one.
And it's heavy.
It's quite heavy, yes. They oftentimes have to take things out of their suitcase to make sure they can check their suitcase when they leave.
All right, so we've piqued people's interest. How do they partake of the Flyway Film Festival?
They can find out about us on the web, on our website, which is flywayfilmfestival.org. Our full schedule is up on our website now. Tickets are available for individual screening as well as passes for the entire weekend if people are interested in doing it that way. Tickets, if they are not sold out in advance, will be available at each venue before the screenings happen.
The towns are Pepin and Stockholm. What are the venues?
The Lake Pepin Art and Design Center in Pepin, and in Stockholm, it's the Wide Spot Performing Arts Center.
There you have it. Congratulations to Rick Vacious and the many other folks who make the Flyway Film Festival not only possible, but inject all different kinds of energy and ideas to make it notable. The dates again are the 18th. That's 2 weeks from yesterday. And it runs through Sunday the 21st in both Pepin and Stockholm. And to repeat, the website is flywayfilmfestival.org.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from Ken Vance Volkswagen, featuring the new 2013 Volkswagen Jetta with the keyless push-button system, allowing drivers to start and unlock the Jetta without using keys. More at kenvance.com.
Spectrum Memo, the Indian Head Barbershop Chorus of Polk and Burnett Counties, presents its 54th annual Harvest of Harmony. That's Saturday, October 13th, a week from tomorrow at the Amory High School Auditorium. Two shows, 2 and 7:30 p.m. They have a website, indianheadchorus.org, and we'll talk a bit more about them on next Friday's show. This is the weekend of the 15th Fresh Art Tour within studios and galleries among the villages of Maiden Rock, Stockholm, Pepin, Durand, Arkansas, and Plum City. It began today and continues through Sunday. 17 sites are featured. All the information you need is at freshart.org. Another art tour this weekend is the Falling Leaves Art Studio Tour. It's been around a while. It includes locations to the south of Eau Claire in the Augusta Fall Creek area. Annette Hennekins is a participant, and today she is a spokesperson. The Falling Leaves Art Studio Tour was started in 2003, so technically this is the 10th actual tour. You have some new things this year. I'm going to let you dive in and tell me what those new things are. You have some new artists. Okay.
Yeah, we do. We've got new artists, and the tour has been shortened a little bit, So it's not quite as long. This year we have 10 new artists with 38 total, 19 stops along the tour, 15 of which are studios. Chance to get to see an artist working in their studio, in their element, Which I think is a pretty cool thing.
Tell me about your art. That's the plus of doing the interview. You get to tout yourself.
Yeah, my jewelry design business is Buddha Bliss Jewelry, and I have unique handmade jewelry using semi-precious stones, glass, shell, pearl, wooden beads, and I like to mix up the different elements. It's just something I love to do. The more I create, the more ideas I get. If I don't create, I go crazy. It's a good outlet.
Well, you have to like it if you have a job, because you have to find time to do it.
Oh, yeah, I do. I make the time.
How long have you been in this vicinity?
I have done this tour every year except the very first year. My family, my mother and I, Candace Hennekins, we would do our own thing, and then we discovered the Falling Leaves Art Tour. So I've been doing an art tour this time of year. I know it's been at least 10 years. It may be 12 years by now.
Well, here's what I'm going to let you do. Tell me, who are the studios that are involved?
Sure.
I have enough time for you to tell me.
Okay. Yeah, we've got stop number one. That's Terry O'Donohue with Shamrock Fine Arts. Number two is Kathia with Priceless Art. And then we've got Monica Brunaise, and her studio is Subarashi. Hopefully I'm saying that correctly, Subarashi Studio. Next, we've got Todd and Jen Meyer with Stone Griffin Studio. And then Sue Kaler with Leaf Street Pottery. She's number five. Mm-hmm. Stop six is Dave and Kim Stencil with Bridge Creek Carvings. Stop seven is Jack and Kathleen Schindkin with Sign of the Times. Number eight is Ron LeBlanc with Many Pines Studio. And then at Beaver Lanes and Pizzeria, we have a couple of artists, Suzanne Sampson and Roxanne Smith. At the Augusta Library, we've got four artists, Pat Gabler, Ann Preston, Kathleen D'Angelo, and Katie Kaufman. And stop 11 is Roseanne Henning, her Henning Art Gallery. Stop 12 is Shelley Laffey with Shelley Fine Arts and Crafts. Number 13 is Donna Pappenfuss. Number 14 is the Dells Mill School. And Claude Schilling will be there and Kathy Mickelson. Number 15 is Pat and Ann Piso with Fox Farm Photography. Number 16 is Tim Smith with Fall Creek Bulls and Butterflies. And at stop 17, which is my favorite stop, that's where I'll be exhibiting at the Lincoln Town Hall, we have Christopher Brooks. He's got portraits. Jean Young with Rising Moon Studio. She has stained glass art. Joel Klink has hand-built ceramics, and his whistles are really fun. Mm. And then I will be there. Stop 18 is Anne and Kat Manor with Meadow Song Studios. And then number 18 is Mel Sunby with his Many Fires Studio.
Okay.
So there's a lot of great, great artists, a lot of great art, and it'll be a beautiful fall drive, too, with the fall colors.
The geographical area into which these 19 stops fit is what? It's the Augusta, Fall Creek?
Yes, Augusta, Fairchild, and Fall Creek.
Has the number of studios and artisans, not just on your tour, but just the fact that they are in that vicinity, has that increased over the last 10 years?
It's gone up and down because we have artists that come and then we have artists that go. And So you have that fluctuation of inflow and outflow.
Annette Hennekins is our guest. Falling Leaves Art Studio Tour. It's tomorrow and Sunday, 9 to 6 Saturday, 10 to 5 on Sunday. You gave us the 19 stops. And you gave them in an order, but obviously people can travel at their own pace.
Right, right. That's the fun part about the tour is it's self-guided. You know, you can pick and choose where you want to go. I would recommend checking out all the stops because you just don't know what you're going to see until you go and look. And it's fun meeting the artists, too. And, of course, there's always the possibility of, you know, if there's really something special you have in mind, like a custom idea. I know myself, that's where I get the biggest joy and the biggest sense of fulfillment is when I do a custom piece for someone. Yeah.
So that happens fairly often?
Yeah, whenever I do an event, I usually get at least one or two custom pieces requests, yeah.
Well, it's good that you say that, though, because most of us rank-and-file artisans would go someplace and leaf through it, and if we didn't see something we liked, we might leave. But it's nice to know that we have that option.
Exactly.
Does it cost more to get a custom piece made?
Generally, no.
Just takes a while?
Just takes a while, yeah. It's a matter of do you have the materials on hand or do you have to order them? So if anything, it might take a little longer, but there's always that sense of satisfaction that I get when I do a custom piece.
Do most of the people that you know that are involved in things like this, will they do custom pieces as well?
I think so, yeah. I think any artist, is generally willing to do that.
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, even a painter, you could commission them to do a painting of your home or your dog or depending on what kind of subjects they like to do.
Mm-hmm.
There's no cost to this tour. There's no cost to go into any of the studios.
The tour's free and there'll be snacks and, you know, light snacks provided along the way. So we'll give you energy to keep going.
Yeah. Once again, 10 new artists for a total of 38, 19 stops, 15 studios are represented. You can access information online. Technology has infiltrated the world of art in very positive ways. What is the website?
Yes, it's Falling Leaves Art Tour, and leaves is plural with an S.
Do you have your own site and you're able to show people what it is you have, whereas before you couldn't?
Yes, actually, starting this year now, I do have a website. It's BuddhaBlissJewelryDesign.com.
Buddha spelled as in Buddha?
Buddha, yeah, B-U-D-D-H-A.
The fat guy.
Yes.
Yes. Couple of art tours this weekend, so take them in if you can. It's that kind of a weekend. Good way to spend a chilly autumn weekend. This is Spectrum West. I'm Al Ross. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Support for WPR comes from Ministry Healthcare, known in the Stanley area as Ministry Our Lady of Victory Hospital and in Marshfield as Ministry St. Joseph's Children's Hospital. Ministry Healthcare, knowing and treating you better. Online at ministryhealth.org.
The Blue Baroque Band performs tomorrow evening at 7:30, and then Sunday it's Monroe Crossing Bluegrass and Gospel, 7 p.m. This is all at the Phipps Center. Auditions for Madeline's Christmas will be Monday and Tuesday, and don't forget the wonderful galleries, all happening at the fabulous Phipps Center for the Arts in Hudson. All the info you need is at phipps.org. No, I'm sorry, the Phipps. That's P-H-I-P-P-S, the Phipps. .org. Okay. A little Beatles music in the background there. Tomorrow night at the Heidi Center, one may get a whiff of some patchouli and 007 or British sterling. May see a pair of stretch Levi's and a bleeding Madras shirt here and there. And there might be the urge to let out a little scream, all because tomorrow night they're going to crank up the Wayback Machine and welcome the Britons, the premier Beatles tribute band. Those in attendance tomorrow will be treated to most every hit, almost everything the Beatles did became one. Of the Fab Four from Liverpool. The Britons have been portraying the Beatles for over three decades. No wonder I caught band member and founder Rick Bertone on a golf course in Door County when I called earlier this week. He needs all the breaks he can get from that kind of schedule. Well, where were you in 1964 when the Beatles were on Ed Sullivan?
I was in my living room watching them on the Ed Sullivan Show, and my dad called me in and said, Rick, look at these guys. You know, so I was listening to them. And at that time, I remember having a transistor radio and walking around the playground, listening to the song, I Want to Hold Your Hand. Just love that song. And all of a sudden, I see these guys playing, and they do that song. And I said, this is the band that does that song. You know, kind of fell in love with the Beatles at that point at 11 years old and started taking guitar lessons a couple weeks later and started combing my hair down.
I was in the den, too. I remember turning to look at my dad when they were on, and he just kept shaking his head.
Yeah. My dad, too. He said, what's with that hair? At that time, I think I probably had a butch haircut, if I'm not mistaken.
It was mandatory.
Yeah, I think it was. But you're going to get a regular haircut. That's what he used to say. But I tell you, that was exciting. And just the energy that the Beatles had at that time in history was just something that everybody was getting into.
Tell me about starting the band. And even more interesting, tell me about keeping the band together, because it's been a while.
Well, I started the band in 1976, and we played our very first job down in the Milwaukee area February of 1977. So it's been 35 years for us now. And I guess it's just the quality of the music, the catalog of music I get to pick from, it just really never goes out of style. And we just enjoy playing it. We used to at one time do about 240 dates a year, and we do about 40 or 50 right now, and we're real comfortable with that.
Wow. So, yeah, I mean, other than proving to be a hit machine for several years where, you know, nothing the Beatles did failed to soar to the top of the charts, we've seen other bands come and go, as indeed the Beatles have now, at least physically. Why do you think they had so much staying power? And is it that staying power that keeps the Britons going?
Exactly, and that's what it is. It's the music is so good, the quality of the songs are so fun. I mean, everybody recognizes those songs from 8 to 80. They just, the young kids are listening to them because their parents did. The older people listen to them because they grew up with it. They're playing songs from Love Me Do to Sgt. Pepper to Revolution. There's something for everybody with the Beatles, and that's kind of what our show is about. We'll do early and late and middle era, both movies, Help and A Hard Day's Night. So we're kind of playing music that if somebody likes the real early Please Please Me, All My Lovin', you know, we've got those songs for them. And some of the people that like Abbey Road and the songs like Something or Why My Guitar Gently Weeps, we have those songs for those people.
Do you have to take time out to take a shot here?
No, I do not. The course is almost empty. We're playing right now, I think, on the seventh course. This is the first time I think I've ever done an interview from the golf course. And this is awesome. We've got great weather out here. I got my family with me. We're just having a great old time. And what better place to even talk about the Beatles?
No kidding. Have you been playing well up to the seventh hole?
Some pretty good holes. This one isn't doing real good for me, so this is a perfect time to take a break.
Good.
And we're so fortunate to have John, Paul, George, and Ringo put this music together for us, thanking them, so I can bring that music to people today where they might have never got a chance to really see what the Beatles were like live. Well, they can do that with us.
I think your success bottom line revolves around a couple choices you've made. First of all, picking the Beatles as your topic, that's obvious. But then picking the generation that follows such things and really doesn't let them go.
Everybody that comes up to me loves them, of course. They just love what we're doing. And we've got more people that bring their young kids out because they want to probably show their kids, this is the music I grew up with. This is what I really like. And that's what I said, with the catalog of music we get to pick from, it's just a win situation for everybody. And, of course, we stick really very authentic with the guitars, the amplifiers, the same exact drum set. We have all our suits custom made. There's a guy that lives in the Maryland who actually has a couple of the original Beatles suits, and he copies them thread for thread, and we wear those.
Wow. How do you keep your gear up? I mean, you know, Vox stuff, they still make all that stuff?
Well, they do. We have some of the old original 1960s amplifiers and guitars, and then there's reissued amps now that they remake them. So authentically, exactly like what they were. Components may be a little bit different, but the looks and the sounds are still very, very, very close. And we use the new and the old.
The Super Beatle.
Right, exactly. We've got a number of those. We've got the AC-30s, the AC-15s, the AC-100s. You know, there's just a number of different ones that they used, and we bring those on stage with us.
So you go through all the transitions throughout your show that the Beatles went through?
Yes. Yes, we do. So we'll start off with From Me to You, I Want to Hold Your Hand, She Loves You, I Saw Her Standing There, and then we'll go from Help and you know, maybe some of the Rubber Soul albums like Girl, and some of those tunes in that era, and then we'll go over to Revolution, Revolver, Hey Jude, Let It Be, some of the Abbey Road tunes. So we try to carry throughout the Beatles' career. We don't go on after the Beatles broke up into individuals, solos, but we kind of stay with the Beatles themselves.
Oh, you do? Okay, cool. Rick Bertone is our guest. He's on a golf course, folks. He's a member and a founder of the Britons, and they are a Beatles, what do you want to call it, tribute band?
Yes.
Okay. They're appearing at the Heidi Center for the Arts. That's in Chippewa Falls, and it's tomorrow evening at 7:30. The Beatles, of course, Rick, their music just doesn't get old. How about you guys? You must have found a fountain of youth.
think that keeps us young, actually, Al. You know, after 10 years, I would have thought, wow, that would have been a long time. But, you know, I don't think there's really any way to predict how long you want to do this for. As long as the people continue to come and see the band and they like it and we're able to give it justice, we'll continue to play.
But I keep hearing about, you know, bands always have, they always have personnel problems.
We get along very well. And it is kind of hard to find four musicians that would agree to do what we do. You have to love the music. You have to want to play it like the Beatles. You can't play it your own way. You've got to play it the way they played it.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got the guys that are enjoy doing it. We all love the Beatles to start with. You have to have that. You can't overplay the Beatles, and that's all dedicated to the quality of what they did. We enjoy that. I mean, we get a kick out of somebody saying, boy, that sounded just like the record, and that's just from sitting with the records over and over again. Of course, today you get better quality recordings than we used to have to originally figure things out, so we're always going back listening to something, maybe figuring out maybe that chord sounds like it was in the fifth position.
Yeah.
So we're able to work with that a little bit and really fine tune the littlest detail.
Okay, were you guys all musicians in other bands before this Beatles thing came up in 76?
Yeah. At one time, you know, we were all in different music and playing a different kind of music. When I used to be in a band, we used to travel through the South, and I was just doing top 40, and my heart really wasn't there. And I might be doing something by, who knows, Stevie Wonder or whatever music was popular at the time. It always came out Paul McCartney. So I figured, you know, listen, I want to do what I really love to do, and I think this would go over. At that time, there really wasn't much for tribute bands way back then. I felt at the time people would listen to all night long because there's such a variety and the music is good enough and they had enough hits that it would go over. They had a lot of Elvis tributes at that time, and that was going over well. I figured the Beatles would too, and actually it has.
I noticed you had at least one coming up, sort of a Beatles convention-type celebration. Do you do a lot of those?
We do. There's a couple radio stations, one here out of Milwaukee. They put on a Beatle Bash every year, and it just goes over very, very well. They've kept enlarging the venue that we play at. You know, they usually bring in about 1,200 people, so it turns out really, really well.
You're on the seventh hole. What is it? Par what?
It's a par four, and I think I'm already on my fifth shot. So, and I'm still not on the green, so just not having a real good hole. I ended up in the woods here. Everybody's looking at me and laughing. You know, and I birdied a hole a while back. You could have called me on that one.
We just got that in, so congratulations on the birdie, man.
So thank you.
Okay, thanks for talking to us.
All right, Al. Thank you very much.
After a conversation like that, you know, I can see why they're successful, why they're still around, because at least one of the four, guy who started it all, is a nice guy, Rick Bertone. They're called the Britons. It's tomorrow evening, 7:30 at the Heide Center for the Arts in Chippewa Falls. And you know, now that I think of it, the Heide Center actually resembles the Ed Sullivan Theater in kind of a way. It's got the curved balcony and everything. Well, you can get information at cvca.net. I'm sure they'll have tickets at the door for you. Wow, big weekend at the Heide Center. Peter Yarrow tonight. Peter, Paul, and Mary fame, and the Britons tomorrow. Deb Johnson and crew doing a great job bringing us notable variety, as do all the marvelous venues in West Wisconsin. And we're fortunate to converse with their principals on a regular basis here on Spectrum West.
Support for WPR comes from Wisconsin Credit Union, announcing a new location in Eau Claire at the corner of Claremont Avenue and Craig Road. Complete information, including membership and loan applications, is at wisconsincu.org.
A Spectrum memo. The UW River Falls Art Department at Gallery 101 presents Fierce, the artistic vision of Dr. Lynn Jermal, or Jermal, J-E-R-M-A-L, a memorial exhibit honoring the late longstanding professor and head of the Art Education Department at UWRF. It opens with a reception going on, and it will be up through the 27th. Okay? All righty. At the Regional Arts Center, Eau Claire Regional Arts Center, it's the 2012 Confluence of Art Biennial Juried Art Exhibit running through October 19th. And they just announced Lindsay Buckingham coming to the State Theater. Whoa! Lots more information at EauClaireArts.com. Oof. Lindsay Buckingham. I try to get him on the show. Somebody told me, I think Ben Richgruber said, nah, he doesn't do interviews, but Ben's going to try. So I've got my fingers crossed. One of my guitar idols there. Her name is Noelle, born around Christmas. That's a good guess. She's been writing poetry since she was about 13 years old. She picked a lucky year. And she's part of a quartet of poets participating this evening in a performance called Gallery of Poems, An Evening of Neural Rewiring, in the gallery of the new Volume 1 World Headquarters. You are, from what I read, a co-author. What's a chapbook?
A chapbook is a work of poetry.
Am I showing my ignorance by asking you what a chapbook is?
No, because whenever I tell people I'm writing a chapbook, about 95% of people I talk to, unless they're actually poets, say, so what is a chapbook?
Okay.
So no, not at all. It's a shorter volume of poetry, typically about 18 to 25 pages.
You have traveled with your poetry. You've read your poetry in some impressive places, San Francisco.
And I lived in California in the past, in Grass Valley, Nevada City, which is the area that when a lot of the beat poets left San Francisco, they moved up to that area.
Mm-hmm.
And I lived out there for about 2.5 years, and that really brought me back into the poetry fold, the poetry world.
Mm-hmm.
And through connections that I made there, I was reading in Sacramento and San Francisco and you know, interacting with just lots of interesting poets in a very strong poetic community.
It's a nice area. What are you going to read for us?
I'm working on two different pieces right now, so there's some of my older work and some more recent things.
Mm-hmm. Older meaning how old?
Older meaning 7-8 years. More recent meaning 5 years. And I haven't really published any of this, so I'm starting to put two different works together.
Oh, it's not a poem that was started 8 years ago and you're finishing
well,
a poem?
Well, I do have some like that I started about 8 years ago and they're still not finished, and I just keep reworking them.
How do you do that, though? Doesn't the transition between all those years change you a little bit?
Yes. I change and the work keeps changing.
Right.
You know, we change together.
Okay. So does this have a title?
Yes. It's called Checkout. I wrote this and I don't think I've ever touched a word since the moment that I wrote about 7 years ago.
All right.
So it's never changed.
So it's clean and green.
Exactly. And it's a short piece also.
Okay, you're on.
Waiting in line for the woman with 200 frozen dinners, each on sale at a different price, gives me the quiet time I desperately need to find out who's banging who in Hollywood.
Oh, yeah, good, yeah, because those magazines are at the checkout.
Exactly.
Cool.
And, you know, you're
and you don't have
line,
to buy it then.
No, and you can just kind of zone out and
almost go
right
cover
there
to cover if the woman's got enough stuff.
Yeah.
See, it doesn't take me long for poems to sink in. I'm a deep guy.
Yeah.
What do you got next?
This is actually a really recent one. I wrote it earlier this spring during May when the storm came through Eau Claire that took out, you know, a large portion of Carson Park and Shawtown. And I was standing on my porch, and this is basically what I personally experienced as I was watching the storm roll in. And this one is currently untitled. Something rolls in from the dark western sky. Something that rides thunderheads and uses lightning as reins. The electrical currents it sends in its stead pulse through my flesh, creep my hair onto end, and run the course of my neural network, covering more points inside me than stars in the Milky Way. It's seen in the mind's eye. It's felt in my left tarsal. It's felt somewhere deep enough that I have yet to discover it. It illuminates frog songs. It hurries day into night and then jars the darkness with street light. It sets me on fire. In gentle clamor and sweet release, it brings me this poem.
See, now you used a word in there that's used in the title of what's coming up later tonight, neural.
Yes, yes, huh? That word seems to come up
I noticed
a
that.
Lot.
Is that like a big poem word, neural?
That's one of my big poem words, yeah. I feel like my brain plays so much of an influence in this that I just can't help but, you know, sing praise to it and give it credit where
yeah.
credit is due.
It's called Gallery of Poems, An Evening of Neural Rewiring. That's a hard word for any radio personality to say, rewiring. It's like rear view mirror.
Rear view mirror.
Yeah, it's at the Volume 1 Gallery on North Dewey Street in Eau Claire, starts at 7 o'clock. Who else is in the Gallery of Poems? Who else will be reading?
Tonight I'm performing with three other poets, Kinsey Jansen, mm-hmm. Alan Jenkins, and Jason yeah. Splishell. A diverse group of poets. We all have different styles, different personas. We're all very intense.
Oh, yeah?
We're all rather intense individuals in our own special ways.
You don't seem intense to me.
It's the way I carry myself mm-hmm. on the stage. It's, I think, the posture.
So as a person talking face-to-face, you're different than you get to be Mr. Hyde when you're reading poetry.
Yes, exactly.
Dr. Jekyll.
Ms. Hyde.
Noelle Kroplin, ladies and gentlemen. And again, it begins in a little more than an hour. 7 p.m. at the Gallery of the Volume 1 headquarters, 205 North Dewey Street in Eau Claire. Good entertaining opportunity to visit the new Volume 1 digs. I haven't been there yet. Have you? Now, the Ellie Phillips Memorial Public Library in Eau Claire is offering a storytime series created for children with autism, spectrum disorder, and it's open to everyone as well. Story times will be held Saturday afternoons at 1, beginning tomorrow, and again on October 27th, November 17th and 24th, plus December 1st and 29th. No registration necessary. The library also presents three local humorists, Larry Heagle, John Loomis, and August Ruprecht. Next Tuesday evening, 7 p.m., it's called Funny Stuff. It's free and open to you and I. Information at the library and, of course, the library website.
Here's what's on stage this weekend and beyond in Western Wisconsin Live Theater. Bingo the Musical will be performed at two different venues by the Menominee Theater Guild. The show will be performed tonight, Saturday, and Sunday at the Leisure Services Center in Menominee. It will move to Dean and Sue's Banquet Hall for the following Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. The Chippewa Valley Theater Guild production of Thoroughly Modern Millie will play tonight, Saturday, and Sunday at the State Theater in Eau Claire. The Northern Star Theater production of Get Smart plays tonight and Sunday and next Thursday, Friday, and Sunday at the theater in Rice Lake. There are no Saturday performances. The Eau Claire Children's Theater production of Ramona Quimby plays tonight and Saturday and next Thursday through Sunday at the Oxford Theater in Eau Claire. I Do will run next Friday and Saturday at the Heide Center for the Arts in Chippewa Falls. The Movie Game plays tonight, Saturday, and Sunday at the Phipps Center for the Arts in Hudson. Also, the Phipps Children's Theater will present Seven Nasty Princesses next Thursday through Sunday at the Phipps Black Box Theater. Ballad of the Pale Fisherman, a production of the Transatlantic Love Affair Ensemble, will be performed Saturday night at the Widespot Performing Arts Center in Stockholm. Star Spangled Girl plays tonight, Saturday and Sunday at the Fanny Hill Dinner Theater in Eau Claire. The show will play weekends and selected weekdays through October 28th. The Old Gem Professional Acting Company's annual production of Johnny Appleseed will play through October 19th for students preschool through third grade at the Old Gem Theater in New Richmond. Playing with Fire will run tonight, Saturday, and Sunday at the Festival Theater in St. Croix Falls. The show will run through October 27th. Moonlight and Magnolias plays Fridays and Saturdays through October 27th at the St. Croix Off-Broadway Dinner Theater in Hudson. And that's some of what's happening in local live theater. I'm Jim Oliver.
Yes, you are. Next week, the fourth installment of an annual disabilities forum. We'll talk with a creator and a keynoter. Speaking of keynotes, we'll also get the scoop on the 54th Harvest of Harmony event in Wisconsin's Great Northwest, the Chippewa Valley Book Festival, and more, always more on Spectrum West. Thanks to Hannah Lagerman for promotional assistance. Hey, keep in touch with Spectrum West on Facebook via email, spectrumwest@wpr.org. I'm Al Ross. See you next Friday. Thanks for being here.